Inseparable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
Well, hello, admirable friends.
It's Tuesday night. Must be night with admirable friends.
It is. And we've got the Three Stooges here tonight again. Carol, Buddy, and Alex.
Mm-hmm. Hello out there.
Tonight's show is on equanimity, actually anxiousness and equanimity. And it's the last of the calming qualities.
Wrapping it up, number 10, right?
Yeah, this is the icing on the cake. The 10th of the 10 ideal mind qualities that we'll be covering in equanimity. And it's kind of the, what do you think, Carol? It's kind of the fruit of the labor, right?
It is.
It's the results you know, a lot of work.
Well, it's the culmination of all the other 9 weeks that precede it, for yes. Sure.
Absolutely. And we're going to go through the same kind of format. We're going to spend the first half of the show kind of describing what anxiousness and equanimity are, in particular, more emphasis on the equanimity side, defining it. And then second half of the show, we're going to give our first-person experiences of being anxious. That ought to be not too hard to come up with anxiousness.
Oh, plenty of those.
You guys have any problems being overly anxious during your day?
Not much.
Okay. So, and then we'll get into examples of equanimity. So, let me start. We'll do the, before we do gratitudes today, I thought, because we've been bringing up our system, and by the way, don't forget to go to the Admirable Friends website on the bbsradio.com/admirablefriends and participate in our live chat during the show tonight. And our main website is admirablefriends.org.
And if somebody emails in, we'll certainly read it on the air. I have one tonight to share with everybody.
Oh, great.
On. So it's nice when people email in and
Kate sent us a link on an article. I don't know if you guys got a chance to read it beforehand, but I did. An excellent article relating to equanimity. And we'll see if we have time to kind of review some of the bullets of that article. And our main website is admirablefriends.org. And this week is kind of a cool week for us because, Alex, as you know, we've been testing the journal. Mm-hmm. So we have our live journal mm-hmm. up and everybody is, and it's kind of cool how we have the private and the public postings of appreciations and gratitudes.
The journal's, all about that action. So you get to get in there and really get your hands around. A lot of times on the show, we're talking about how to develop these qualities, and the journal gives you a good place to go in there and really get your hands around it and kind of back up a lot of these concepts with some actual work. See where it goes, track your results, and, develop some great qualities along the way.
Yeah. But I thought because in the practice, our menu system in our journal is basically concept, practice, understand, three different sets of menus. And like the philosophy of the overall program, we start with a concept and then we actually practice with that concept to understand it. The analogy, of course, would be the map of a territory being the concept, and actually walking and experiencing the territory would be the practice, and the understanding would come from both of those activities. Concept kind of points us in the right direction. And in the journal, we have some inspiration under the concept side. Besides having our curriculum, we have the inspirational pictures and links to videos and audios.
And you can filter that too. You can decide what it is you want to see as far as inspirational. They can have a thread or a theme, and the pictures can go along with that too. So it's very subjective. You can pick and choose what it is you want to have, or you can filter it out.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's say you were working on just goodwill.
Mm-hmm.
You check off goodwill on your filter, and you'd be seeing inspirational across your journal quotations, pictures, audios, videos relating to goodwill if that was your work for the week.
One of the cool parts that I like is the upload. I like seeing what the other people in the system suggest when it comes to those qualities and come to sharing with others. So,
right.
So whether it's a link to a video, or if it's an article they've read, or if it's a nice quote or something, you hit the upload, you select where you want it, and it comes to us on the back end of the admin, and we're then able to share that with
what we do is we clean up the image and we clean up the link and make sure it's all tied. But I've been doing that in the back end, and it's been interesting to see how people categorize their images and equate them with the mind quality. So it really shows that people are actually training and doing the work. And
what connects with them?
Yeah.
What speaks to them?
Resonates with them, exactly, Carol. So yeah, Alex, that's a good part of having that inspirational piece under the concept. And then, of course, as we get to the practice, the first two entries in the menu are appreciation, daily appreciation, and then daily gratitudes. And before we talk about our gratitudes today, I just want to kind of define these again. We've talked about it in the show generally, but if I could take a couple moments.
Yeah, I think it's important too, because I usually am hovering over that little box there that defines what each one is kind of every time I go through it, because you know, it's just to make sure I'm clear on my intentions behind what I'm about to fill in.
Right. Well, you know, when you go fill in a daily appreciation, first of all, by definition, a daily appreciation are feelings for things or incidents that I have benefited from. So when you hit the button to actually fill one in and you add an appreciation for the day, all it says is I appreciate dot, 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 and the open box of what you appreciate. Again, it's relating to those feelings and incidents that you appreciate. And then, of course, you decide whether you're keeping it in your personal journal or whether you want to share it with the network.
Mm-hmm.
Then you also have...
Now, when they share it with the network, it's anonymous. It doesn't have their name attached to it. So
exactly.
Nobody knows who it's coming from.
Nobody knows who it's coming
from. So there's
from.
Really no harm in sharing it.
No.
Because there's no... It's an anonymous thing.
Right. But there's one other option in your journal. If you're being coached and you've welcomed a coach or a teacher, you can decide to share your entire journal, even your personal journal, with your coach. That's a choice of the user. So really there's sharing, whether I want to share it with the network in an open discussion forum without the name. And then, of course, if I'm coached, I decide whether I want to share with my coach. That's a decision of the person. And coaching relationship, of course, is different than the admirable friend relationship. It's more of a commitment. Okay, so appreciations of feelings for things or incidents that I benefited from. Now, daily gratitude is actually recognizing and learning from the kind action of others. Here, this relates to an actual action conducted by somebody else that we are grateful for. And we're recognizing and learning for that. So when you actually enter the gratitude, the first thing it asks you is the action.
Mm-hmm.
So it's getting to, and you can clearly see that if I'm grateful for a sunny day, that wouldn't work here.
Well, what I picked
that would
up
be
on
an appreciation.
The,
I appreciate a sunny day.
The feelings versus actions. The appreciation is more of a sense, you know, a feeling-based observation, whereas the gratitudes, we're looking a little more refined, what action specifically.
Yeah, but then you got to realize that when you actually enter it, you not only are you putting the action, you're putting the person that performed the action,
mm-hmm.
you're checking off whether you trust their motives and you know that they went out of their way, And lastly, you're saying, what lesson did I learn from this? So gratitude is really a bigger stretch than an appreciation, because it's almost got to pay it forward. You're saying this action that happened, and I'm grateful for, it's not just something that came my way. It's something that I plan and learn from. So
there's more substance to it.
Oh, definitely. It's a whole different level. And, you know, because in order for the gratitude to be, it actually has to have three elements to be heartfelt. It has to be benefited. You have to have benefited from that person's actions. You have to have trusted their motives. And you realize that the other person went out of their way to provide that benefit. And the key lessons we learn from gratitude is it touches on the nature of human action itself. And basically the sense that we've benefited from another person's action underscores the point that action does give results. Number two, the importance we give to the other person's motive in helping us underscores the point that the quality of the action lies in the intention behind it. So you're actually recognizing by saying, I trust the motives of that person, you're actually getting into the intention behind their action, which again is something that you can learn from and is demonstrable.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the sense that the other person went out of their way underscores the sense that actions aren't totally, that action isn't totally determined. We feel indebted to the people who helped us because we sense how easily they might have denied that help and how difficult our life might have been if they hadn't chosen to do so. There's a lot of depth behind that gratitude. For us to learn it as we go. But it's the good thing is, Carol, they can start by entering them.
Yes.
But there's a lot of depth to gratitude, and there's a lot to be learned from gratitude. And of course, the hard thing is, if you haven't been very gracious yourself and you haven't practiced generosity, it's going to be really hard to recognize the generosity of others. That's why it's so fundamental in our program to really think about generosity as kind of a foundational issue as the way you approach your life.
I just like how it's all laid out for everyone there. We're literally logging, and I've said before, when you log into the system, you're immediately doing an action that's contributing to your overall development. Just by logging in. It's very user friendly. It gets you, when we talk about shifting the conversation, and it's that shift from external to internal towards developing, that's basically what the login. Instead of login, it should say shift, because as soon as you log into this thing, you're doing something that is directly corresponding to your own development. And the gratitudes are just great, because now that I'm doing all these gratitudes, I'm looking for gratitudes during my day. I'm looking for grateful actions. I'm looking for things to be grateful for.
It's infectious. And you just got to do it daily. You just sit down
and sharing.
At the same time.
I said before,
and
I love looking and seeing what other people are grateful for, because then I can go looking in those similar areas and look at
the sharing aspect
and what they learned about it.
Really nice.
I mean, that's open-ended, so that goes... it goes well beyond your traditional, let me just kind of look at some quotes or read an inspirational book. This is good activity.
Well, it gets us in that generous mode.
And I believe it's on, you can get it on an iPad, a tablet, right? Everything
It's all
really user-friendly.
Right, your tablet or your mobile phone as you do it. I was doing it the other day in the car, stuck in traffic. I was entering a gratitude. Actually, it wasn't a gratitude. It was an appreciation that I wasn't.
Was that why you were driving stuck in traffic?
No, I was stuck.
Literal?
Stuck. Yeah.
Stuck. Right there. Stopped.
Yes. I think this is uncharted territory here.
Yeah. We better keep
moving on.
Okay. So now that we're on gratitudes, Carol, why don't you start with your gratitude?
Well, my gratitude is something that happened retro, kind of. In the obituary in the Boston Globe, there was a gentleman that just recently passed away. But what brought to mind my gratitude was that he was he and his brother, his name was Tom, his brother Ray, did a show on NPR called Car Talk.
Oh, yes.
And they were from Boston. They were on there, and they talked about cars and...
Funny guys.
Oh, man. The two of them had such a wonderful rapport for brothers. And I can't tell you how many times I listened to them that they brought such joy, and I found myself laughing out loud or just taking such pleasure in listening to them. But not only that, I learned a lot about what they were talking about as far as cars went, and you know, I could follow what they said, and they were very practical, and so his passing made me think about how much joy they brought
from the actions that you learned from was the joy of the show.
Yes, and just in the content as well, as far as the car, things
right.
about a car.
But again, when we talk about what we've learned, we're trying to relate it to the inner mind qualities versus the educational element of the cars. So in terms of inner quality, you learned like the heart of joy, happiness, would you say?
Came to mind. I felt joy. The sheer lightness of the joy that I got from listening to them.
There's a lot of authenticity with those guys. Those men were always consummate professionals.
Yes.
These guys ran such a fabulous show. I was cracking up
yeah.
too.
Yeah. It's just something
of
about
course.
It. It was so light, and it just brought such lightness.
That's why you have a better sense of humor than I did. Maybe that's because you watched that show and I didn't.
No, I don't think so.
No, you have to think about it. What does make up your sense of humor? It has to be the actions that you and the people you associate with. Right?
I just thought how sad it was that the team was broken up, but they're just such a joy listening to them and just
yeah, I know a lot of people like that.
Hearing it in their voices. They just were really good together. So
Alice, you want to take credit for gratitude?
That was a good gratitude. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy those guys. My gratitude.
By the way, I didn't see that one online, did you?
You know, you never want to spoil before the show, right?
That's
so,
right.
So now she can go and enter
it
now.
You see it online,
yeah.
And it says it doesn't post the name. If we saw you didn't post this one online because I didn't see that one.
No, not yet. That would have been a surprise.
No, I did not.
Yes, and you won't see this one either that I'm about to discuss, but shortly after you will. My gratitude for today comes after a weekend, so. On Sundays, I do some volunteer with some youth sports, and we do some flag football out at a complex in a city close where I live to. And week in and week out, I go out there with another coach, and we help. I think it's 8 or 9, maybe even 10 young boys. Learn the game of football, have some fun, get out there. And just, learn some lessons while we're out there as well. They do a lot of character building and what we talk about, and we go out there. And so we're nearing the end of our entire season here. And to be fair, these group of kids, I mean, I've never seen more heart, but we have just been beat week in and week out, just beat down. And I feel like as the coach, he and I are taking on a little bit more than the kids are. You know, week in, week out, we look at them, and they still got the smiles, and they're still coming out the next week playing just as hard and everything. And we're sitting there looking at each other saying, well, what are we going to do, and what can we do? And so after our last game, one of the kids had we finally won our first game. We won our first game, and everyone's just pumped up, and they're just having a great time, and the smiles on their faces, and we go to where we meet after the game. And one of the kids says, oh, after I won that game, I feel like, I feel successful, like I can do anything. And I just kind of like looked at him, and I was grateful that this kid reminded me, his actions, his words reminded me not to take things so serious, or not to ever think that things are lost. You know, for 8 weeks we've gone and gotten pummeled, and I'm thinking, what am I going to do to make sure these kids don't lose all this confidence? Whereas this kid is actually reverse, he's building confidence as it's boiling up, waiting for that one moment to where he does succeed, and then everything then is kind of let out. So very grateful for that group of kids to kind of get me back on track and keep me going.
Great. I'm actually the action that I'm grateful for are trustworthy deeds that come from trustworthy people in my life. I entered that this morning on the system and shared it with everyone. But basically, kind of recognize the lesson that I've learned from that is that it really gives me a sense that human society is worthwhile. You know, when I look at people that you can trust, indeed you can trust, and people that are trustworthy, it's positive. Because often, you know, Carol, I can tend to lean towards the dismay. In the way life is normally lived, but I get my confidence from trustworthy people. And I'm grateful and recognize that I kind of paid attention to who they were, and that I could trust them, and realize, wow, if it wasn't for that, you know, I wouldn't get any confidence.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for trust.
That's a nice gratitude.
Okay. So that covers the gratitude section, a little bit more on the definition. Hope I didn't bore all of you, but like I said, it's easy to start. If you go online, just pump in those, like you say, Alex, jump online, put in your gratitudes each day, and you're off and running. It all takes a couple days.
You're going to have to change that button from login to shift, because that's what you're doing when you hit it.
Yeah. And it does turn your mind right around to the giving side, and you know it when you sit there, because the first thing you're doing is grinding it out when you're sitting there. Okay, what am I going to be grateful for today? So you already know your mind was looking the other way.
It's a conscious decision when you hit that button to go into it. You've done the hardest step, and that's direct your attention.
I think the major thing is to say, I can't think of anything I'm grateful for.
No, of course you can't, because that's because you're already asking for something.
And so then once you sit down and reflect and give it a little bit of space.
It comes.
It does.
It comes. I love Click and Clack. Listen all the time to radio. Great gratitude, Carol.
Shout out.
Somebody's talking on the instant chat. That's from Tom.
So there he knows.
He would know.
I'm sure he knows.
I've
actually sat in the driveway waiting for the show to end because I didn't want to shut off the radio to go inside the house.
I've actually used their advice before.
Yes, I can still remember.
So there's a grateful. Grateful for them because I actually was able to fix my car due to their...
You guys are so lighthearted. I'm so envious of you.
Wonderful, wonderful.
All right, let's stop the lightheartedness and let's get into equanimity.
Right. Oh, my sleeve, let's go.
Well, Alex, why don't you start us off? A little bit of education on equanimity.
Education, equanimity. Love equanimity. Probably one.
Wish you were there all the time.
I'll tell you what. It is one of those that you kind of, or at least I put equanimity up there very high on the pedestal. I know in moments where I've been, I guess the term would be equanimous, that I have witnessed myself do some unspeakable things and very, very great things when you're in that composed, calm state. And so the definition of equanimity is the mental calmness, composure, and evenness of emotion and temperament. And so usually accompanies a meditative practice, which we will go into a little bit further, but...
Actually, the meditation is only a complement to two of the 10 mind qualities. That would be restraint and equanimity.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about how it's a complement.
How it directly relates. Yeah. And so we've got some principles when we're talking about the development of equanimity. And equanimity seems to be more of a kind of a result that you can look at, and it's really really encompasses the when and when not to act. Action is very big when we're talking about equanimity and that state of mental calmness, because it's the realization that our actions do matter and that they kind of have this this positive negative pull that's going to bring you either to a more equanimous or more anxious state. Your actions, and when you end up seeing the result of these actions, you're able to determine whether or not you're being equanimous or being anxious. Those ends up being the result of the actions that end up leading to those.
Typically, when you're calm, you make better choices.
It's as simple as that. I don't want to make it much more harder than that. When you're composed, when things are in balance, typically, decisions are coming, more clarity, things like that. And when you're anxious and emotions.
When stress arises, calm heads prevail.
Right.
You know, so that.
Whereas the opposing aspect of anxiousness, that little bit of anxiousness that one of our callers wrote in, and I think quite rightfully so, that feeling of anxiousness comes from an unmet desire, you know, and it's there, it's kind of a quiver, and you know, you can see that if you don't learn how to calm that anxiousness down, you're going to make a bad choice.
Right, and when the anxiousness does come, it's not to say, well, I'm anxious and I can't become calm. It's at that moment becoming calm to make a decision that leads you out of that. And that's where the skill is. And so when we go into the actual development of becoming equanimous, it's very important to know that you're expanding a capacity at any moment to be calm and to turn yourself back on track. Because make no mistake about it, the world does test you and you will become anxious and your actions will lead to a more anxious and stressful state. How quickly can you rebound? How quickly can you be aware that you're anxious and then be able to turn that sort of a situation into a direction that leads towards...
Well, so many of the mind qualities, especially early on, Alex, are greatly enhanced by matters of the will. And but what I mean by that is, you know, we can desire to be more generous and we can actually will more generosity. It's hard to will equanimity. It's kind of like something that's built up, you know, and things are really going lousy and you're anxious or things are stressful, as you said, Carol. You know, you can't will equanimity at that point. You've either done the work or you haven't. So I call it 5-minute equanimity is all you get with the will. And then it's gone.
Actually, it's sort of that divine grace.
I'll pick that up from someone else, huh?
It's sort of like the phrase that comes to mind is like divine grace that you cultivate.
Mm. Yeah, you cultivate in preparation of those moments because you just can't will equanimity.
Yeah, I look at it to bring in another quality, a quality like discernment, right? Knowing when to make the decision versus whether. If the ability to be calm when the opportunity presents itself to go one way or the other isn't there, you're not giving yourself the best chance
to discern. Right, the discern faculty is almost like sharpening a decision with a dull knife.
Exactly.
Your equanimity is sharpening that knife
exactly.
to make that wise choice.
And that's why it's put under the calmness quality is because when it is developed, that calmness then is allowed to spread to these other qualities and allows them to really
qualities.
Take them over. And
Spot
you can
on.
Do them with anything, authenticity or, you know, character. I mean, all that stuff is allowed to flourish when the kind of sea isn't as choppy.
Well, unfortunately, you got to go through all those 9 mind qualities and really work at them to end up with an equanimous state. And as we said, you can't leave out a contemplative practice, either meditating or doing some form of contemplation, which is intentionally quieting your mind on a regular basis. Because what you're doing is learning through paying attention to your body how to calm those
things. But
seeds.
Also gives you that quiet space where you can see things, and where you can make that that choice.
You are. You're almost training yourself to be calm with the calmness because we are so fast-paced, it's a little jarring for people just starting off on a practice like this to even imagine being calm for, you know, 5-10 minutes. The body, that's a jarring. The mind gets a little jarred from it.
Right.
So,
equanimity to most people starting is like going on the beach and lying down.
Right.
Yeah, that's where they could exercise equanimity. They have to create the external conditions, but to develop internal qualities of equanimity is work.
Well, the mental vision I get of equanimity is the eye of the storm. Mm. You know, when you're in that, if you're in a tornado and you're right there in the middle, that's the quiet
that's a great
part.
Picture,
and then you see everything going around you and you think, I'm not a part of it. I am just right there in the center.
Wasn't there one guy in New York said he was in the middle of that tornado, by the way?
I think he said he was in 17 of them or something.
Okay. So, Alex, you've given us a great kickoff to anything more you want to add on that overall?
Just, the other part of the definition I just wanted to touch on was that evenness of emotion. When you look at that phrase, evenness of emotion, try to find, a time in your day where you can speak to that.
Yeah.
An evenness of emotion, right?
How about if we call that poise? Is that what you mean?
I mean, it's that is that, you know, that go look for that. That's really subtle, you know?
But you know,
evenness of emotion.
That's not a zombie. When you talk evenness of emotion,
you have to be aware at some level
That's why I chose, when I developed the document, to put a tightrope walker on the line as the picture.
Oh, yeah.
Because that tightrope walker is not just equanimous sitting up there willy-nilly saying, I'm disenchanted or I'm disengaged.
Mm-hmm.
Equanimity is actively engaged at a very subtle level. Think of the balance of
examples. I'm glad you put a tightrope walker or somebody doing something physically. You see with a lot of big sports athletes, they'll be the first ones to tell you before games, they get this anxiousness and a lot of these emotions going.
Right.
And then after the game, once they've gone through the whole deal of the match and they've come out
they're drained.
On top, they're drained. But they'll tell you, I didn't deny what was going on,
right.
but I didn't go off the other end with it. I kept
they calibrated.
They kept a very balanced and
right.
very...
What I'm saying is it was active. I know golfers after they played the U.S. Open, one of the most highest tests of skill. They look calm as a duck on the top of the water, but underneath that all, they were working at that calmness,
mm-hmm.
right? They were letting go of an awful lot of stressors and being aware of stressors to arrive at that calmness.
Mm-hmm.
So again, equanimity is active. We are active, getting back to your actions. We are active doing this.
And in a lot of times when you go through these qualities, the term emotion, I feel, a lot of times gets stigmatized as though emotions are bad. We know you shouldn't be an emotional person, or when emotions get... Here we're talking about the evenness of emotion. That's saying emotions are going to rise, right? What are we doing with these emotions that can either lead us to more stressful or not a stressful situation? So... it's the evenness of emotion, not discounting emotion and not going off on the emotional, you know, roller coaster.
Right.
It's that evenness to kind of really accept and
I keep
actually
the
phrase take aim and let go. Yeah,
you know, not going one extreme or the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
I like the phrase take aim, let go. That paradox that we always throw out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, you're not one way or the other. You're not just letting go, letting go, letting go.
Right, and you're not exactly. So.
You're having to take aim or actually make some choices. Great. Carol, how about when it comes to developing equanimity, we start on the outside and then we work to the inside. So
right.
maybe I'll cover the inner qualities of
right.
development.
Two,
you cover the outer qualities.
We're going to discuss two levels of equanimity that progress naturally. And one is the outer level, which are the senses, and then the inner level. So,
yeah.
But the outer part of it is that, and this more than any other mind quality brings up that serenity prayer as far as, it says, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, wisdom to know the difference. So this part of equanimity and the senses outwardly are realizing the times when we have to make that judgment, what to pick up, what to let go, and seeing it for what it is. And so some of these, we use what's called the unlimited attitudes, or we're using four attitudes to...
Well, just before you go into those attitudes for a second, so what you're talking about, I guess we used to use that word of circle of influence when we were growing up, the kids. Remember that? We'd say, what's in your influence? Where's
Correct.
Your circle?
And now we call it the 50% rule. What's
right.
in your 50%?
What can you do about the situation? Right.
What's under
that,
your control?
What's under your control,
sure.
which you can affect? And just learning to delineate between those two is an element or a step in the right direction towards equanimity, correct?
Absolutely. No yeah. doubt about it. So that's what you have to see is what's directly under your control.
Yeah.
What's in your circle of influence that you have the choice to make?
Because you lose balance when you're out there giving. When someone's not ready to receive, you're not listening, paying attention, you're a compassionate fool.
Sure, I mean, you can't drag
you're
somebody across the finish
at all.
Line.
You're not compassionate at all. It's either side, you're falling off the tightrope analogy. So it takes a level of thought to think about what can I do to help this situation out, right? Where's the circle of influence? Where can I influence
well,
this?
Well, and the benefit
and
is...
how can I influence it?
Correct. And the benefit is going to be the reliable happiness on the backside of it. Because by you not discerning which way to go, you're going to invite stress if you're trying to affect an outcome that is not under your circle of influence.
Yes.
If you're trying to...
That becomes more of a
control.
You know,
if somebody said, we've got to hang out with so-and-so because they're just not happy, or it's like... Okay, so me, going out with them or hanging out with them is going to make them happy. Let's bring this back a bit. Let's think this
right.
through.
This is an unhappy person. I've
right.
tried everything
I mean, so,
I can
I mean,
to try
I
to
highly
ease
doubt
their pain.
That my influence is going to make this person happy. Or
well, you've thought about it, though, right? You might
really?
Have said, I've tried and it doesn't work. And then
sure.
you kind of back off and say, there's nothing I can do for this
sure.
person.
Sure. So, I mean, there's times when you have to take stock in your thoughts or your words or your actions and ask, is this going to make an effect? Does this really help? Going back to the timely beneficial.
It's a great thought. That's great to bring in Timely, truthful, and beneficial.
Timely, truthful, and beneficial.
Well, actually beneficial,
So I think if you use those as a benchmark in what you think, say, and do as far as, is this in my influence? Like if somebody's talking to you, asking, well, what actually are they asking of me?
Yeah.
Versus jumping in and just doing anything, like throwing everything but the kitchen sink and thinking that that's going to help when that wasn't even asked of you.
Yeah, these are great tips on how to deal with
so,
it. Okay, so you were talking about those four
yes.
Attitudes
so
that we're going
to we're
going to
go back to the unlimited attitudes and we always, well, goodwill is always one on the
let's
top
label
of the list.
Those four attitudes. Goodwill, compassion,
sympathetic joy, and equanimity.
Okay.
And so the first three, the goodwill, compassion, and sympathetic joy, are wishes that we extend.
Yes.
Outwardly. So.
And they're unlimited wishes.
Correct.
We're not supposed to put any limits on those.
And goodwill, we've spoken about this numerous times, and we bring it up every week.
Wishing people to act skillfully.
Right. Hope for others to make choices leading to their reliable happiness.
Right.
And so compassion is hoping for others to not continue to experience stress. And sympathetic joy is the hope or
actually, compassion is like another step beyond goodwill. You first wish them to be well, and then you're trying to actually relieve them of their stress would be compassion, right?
Yes.
So it kind of builds on
that.
Goodwill.
Sure.
And then joy would be what?
Sympathetic joy is pleasure when others are experiencing joy.
Us or others. You know, it's interesting, and I was going to catch everybody on the show with this sympathetic joy and also with goodwill. It's so often that we go outside and we say, I wish empathetic joy outwardly. You know, when do we wish and recognize joy in our own hearts? It's not often, is it?
No, it's not.
When we think about wishing joy, we're always thinking about wishing somebody else joy. So go ahead with your point.
And then the final fourth unlimited attitude, of course, is the equanimity, the feeling of calm and poise in situations that might be out of our control. So,
but that's not a hope, is it?
No, it's not a hope. It's a knowing it's the result of all the efforts and hard work that preceded it. So, and one of the examples that I've given before is when you wish goodwill and you've tried to be compassionate and you still find that stress or suffering persists afterwards. And when you figure out there's nothing else you can do, you let it go.
Hmm.
I mean, so just seeing it for what it is, I think, is basically the bottom line. But you can't do that without having some sort of calming mechanism associated with it. Because if you're running at 50 miles an hour, you're not going to see the slower aspect of it. You got to slow down just a little bit to see it.
Is that where you get all your equanimity from?
It's slowing
that
down.
Practice at sidebar, that meditation.
I find it very helpful.
Yeah. How about you, Al?
Yeah, I'm the same way. I got to have a practice that kind of puts me in that situation. Kind of see how it feels like. Meditation allows me to kind of see that space. You know, almost see the opposite too. You know, it's good to see
you
when you're anxious.
You want to let our audience know how often you do it? Is it regular? I don't want to put you on the spot.
It's as regular as I try to do it. I mean, I do skip it a day sometimes, but I find ways during the day to get my practice in. But, you know, I try to do it daily. I try to set time aside daily, you know, just like I try to set time aside daily to go into the system and say my gratitudes and things like that. You know, you have to will yourself into some of these actions that are going to result.
It's as much an effort as you do when you run each day, isn't it?
It really is. You know, you go back to the quality of determination. You know, where have you set the bar? I mean, what is it you're shooting for?
What are you in it for?
What are you in it for? I mean,
and that gets back to that whole wish for reliable happiness. If you're not really trying to make this happen, you're not going to do the work.
If you're a person that finds it hard to hold themselves accountable, this would be a very hard practice for you. A lot of the stuff is the accountability of.
But that's where the biggest leverage is.
It is.
You're going to get the most amazing, incredible results and strength and credibility with yourself once you start doing it and you see it.
I mean, when we go, you talked about, I love the 50% rule because that is the heart of it, right? The 50% rule, what is it you have control over? Well, that's exactly what we're talking about with this this process, is what you have control over. And that's developing these qualities so that the actions then reflect the internal and the external becomes a mirror for that reflection. And so that's where the
50%. And we all know that the internals do not get developed as far as ordinary living. You end up learning about ways of the world. You learn about cars, to use your example, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's a shift to learn to build your inner qualities. You know, the education like that and training like that are necessary, obviously, because they build skills. They build us computer skills. They build us sales skills, all necessary to conduct our affairs. But it's so easy to let these inner qualities just not even be looked at, right? And just assume that we're going to gain them.
Well, it's not something that we were trained to do growing up through our lives as children, as young adults, into adulthood. It's not something that's habitual in our lives. So that's why we find it harder. I find it easier when I see the younger adults at Fort Worth Meditation doing it. They haven't.
But when you really look at these mind qualities, aren't they just character qualities?
They are, but much like civics class in school, I mean, we've kind of lost the art. We've lost the art of conversation. We've lost the art.
Are you saying we don't teach our kids character anymore? It's not that important.
Oh, I think we teach it. I think we teach it, and I think we talk about it.
Maybe we don't live it?
I think we don't tie the two together often enough. I don't think we tie specific action to the development of the character concepts.
How about throwing that out to our listeners on our chat line? Are we living with strong character, and are we helping our kids build their character? Is this gone? Because we're talking about it like we have to work so hard at it.
I don't think we have to work hard at it. We've just forgotten it because we don't. I don't know whether it's. I don't want to say it's technology, it's TV, it's everything else. It sort of gets diluted.
With all the luxuries we got, you think?
I do. I think it kind of gets.
I think it's almost such.
Boy. I didn't expect
watered
to go
down.
Here. I didn't expect to go here on the show, but let's go.
When we're talking about forgetting it, to forget something as important as this, for me, is a fear. And I don't want to forget.
Yeah, that's why I don't want to say out loud that we don't do it.
So you're fearful of your actions if you didn't develop your qualities. Let's go down. What is that fear?
That fear is the result of what my life becomes if I don't.
Okay, now go further. What would your life become? Are you fearful of your ability to stay a happily married man?
I'm worried of the negative effect I would have on others.
Ah.
That keeps me in balance.
Very gracious. Skillful answer there.
So.
Very nice.
And a lot of that's taken time.
That's not just
something I pulled up out of here. You know, that's something you had to work to.
But that's a healthy sense of fear.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The fear is what drives me to continue. They said one of the great activities is, write down, they've done in several things, your obituary if things were to go wrong tomorrow, right, how would you want people to remember you? It's going to be based on your actions. They're going to speak to that. What would they say about you?
Ooh.
You know? And that's
so you're
that
telling me
sort
that
of fear.
If I hear you correctly, your fear is driving your heedfulness.
It's making you pay
attention to your actions because you're concerned with the consequences if you didn't.
Yes.
Excellent. Carol, is that the same deal for you or is it different?
No, I'd say it's similar. Yeah.
Really? And what is your fear of?
I often think, like Alex said, if you were to reflect back and look at it, I just think that it was a sense of purpose that I didn't squander my time here on
Earth. So you'd be fearful that you lived a life without any meaning.
Correct.
What you're saying?
Any kind of authenticity, that I was something less than myself. And if I don't find and tap into that authentic me, then it just would seem for naught, kind of.
Wow.
I don't know.
What's your buddy? Tell us your fears.
Yeah.
I do have the fear. There's no doubt I have the fear. It's not like any of your fear. My fear has to do with the afterlife. First of all, I prefer not to be, I don't want to get into my religious belief, but I, I prefer, I'm fearful. Let me see if I can talk to all religions. I'm fearful that if I don't have good qualities of the mind, that I won't be able to handle my death properly, calmly. And wherever I go, I believe I can take those qualities with me, those inner qualities. Mm-hmm. I don't think anything external that I've acquired or any relationships carry on. Whatever that transcendent view is beyond the next life, so to speak, I believe you're taking those qualities, those mind qualities. So I'm fearful if I don't have those and what that would mean.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I see.
Talk about opposing views on...
Yeah, I mean, we just... That's weird.
You thought it was opposed? I actually thought it was a little similar, too. I saw the similarity in it.
No. They're similar. I mean, they're similar. We all have fears.
Yeah.
But your fear had to do with being a wrecking ball to others. It was kind of in today's life.
Mm-hmm.
Your fear was personal, if I heard it right, that said, Carol, you were going to live a life like a... You're fearful that you'd be just a leaf blowing in the wind and you had brought nothing to this earth while you were here.
Pretty much. Okay.
I don't know you by now. We're married.
Yes.
Did you know that was my fear?
Yes.
You did. Okay. My fear was what happens next life. And I have to prepare for it. And as you both know, I've had my bouts with cancer and got through it. So I had a glimpse of what it was like to see the door and the window shutting. And it's not a pretty picture.
But you know what? I don't think it's a morbid thing to think in terms of reflecting back on your life. I think maybe...
In fact, we should do that. And then when we turn around and say, what are we going to live now to get to that point?
Yeah.
It's not morbid at all.
That's what I
It's strategic.
I found it, for a guy who's not too strategic, that is the one strategic question I'll ask myself quite often. I'll go that far down the road because it'll come back. I'll boomerang right back to the present moment, and I will see my actions take a total turn.
Yes.
See, that's funny you said.
So you're saying it's good to reflect in the future.
But he's not. But he's not futuristic as far as he's not. But and strategic. It's funny that you said that because I don't find myself strategic or futuristic at all. But I do find that is one of those things, the exception to the rule,
mm-hmm.
where that. That seems like a necessary
reflection. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that each person that joins Admirable Friends and participates with us in Admirable Friendship has reflected at this level. I don't care what futuristic skills they have or not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying something in their life led them karmically to reflect on their matter and their purpose in their life.
Like, what's it all about? Where's it all going?
They're all
Where's
asking
my place
that question.
In all this?
They're truth seekers, and in one way or another. And I've just seen the common element of people that stick with the program. So I don't think it's a personality quality, as you were trying to nail Alex. You know, he has that futuristic, but, you know, from the Gallup Strength Finders. But he does have this, for whatever reason, a purpose that you want to put in your life. Right? Your purpose may be to helping others. Yours may be to serve well. Mine may be to take it on to the next life. And by the way, I'm not just saving it all for the next life, because the way I figure it strategically, if I'm building it for the next life, I'm helping people in the current life. It's just my motive is out there. I see the benefits you're talking about, Alex, and directly it pulls you right back to now, because you turn around and say, what do I got to do now to affect that outcome?
Right.
Which means you work doubly hard, at least in my case.
It's a maximizer for you.
Now that's more personality driven. And that's more desirous type. But all of us seem to have that. And I was just going to go out on a limb and say that Admirable Friends have this. What do you guys
think? Well, I'd be curious,
We're going to do our one-day retreat. By the way, anybody that hasn't signed up, we're almost filled up for our one-day retreat down in Fort Worth on Saturday, December 6th, from 9 to 4. We're going to have a day of R&R where we're just quiet with each other and do some meditation, do some eating in noble silence. You need to send us a hello at admirablefriends.org if you want to join the retreat. It's no charge at all. But there's an excellent day to actually experience this mind quality equanimity. You guys have been on retreats before, and you know that that's probably... a day that you wouldn't otherwise experience.
No, it really is a wonderful, wonderful day. Nice way to reflect.
Yeah, I've had a great time every time. You know,
put together 8 hours of barely talking and just quietly walking and being quiet with yourself? It's tremendous. And you do it with others. It's just that feel. And it's like you're with everybody in community, but you're not in a regular fashion.
Well, you know everybody's there. You're drafting off of everybody else, too, because you know that they're doing the same thing. You're not alone.
And Ian's wife is preparing the food. So, you know, as usual, we'll have great food
That's great.
For the retreat. And it's going to be limited to 15 attendees within the house we're in.
Mm-hmm.
We'll probably subscribe at 17. I'm at 14 now because I figured two people, for whatever reason, will drop out. But anyways, there's an opportunity to share in equanimity. So now that we've confessed the big picture, let's get back to anxiousness and equanimity. And we went right through the break this today, by the way.
We did, but that's okay.
That's okay. So where has, let's start on the positive side. Where have we found that poise and calmness that's actually served us well? Let me throw that at you guys. Can you give me a specific example and talk in first person if you can?
Specific example of the calmness. Well, it usually is accompanied by a preceding stressor or an event that you can kind of see the rise of something coming. I kind of see it.
Specifically, when you
right,
I'm
laying
career,
the context for
soccer career.
Oh gosh, yeah. I mean, in sports,
how about when you had to make a penalty shot?
For those of you that don't know, a penalty shot is 12 yards out from the goal, just you and the goalie stepping up in front of.
Remember that one time though when there was really pressure and you walked the gauntlet without a problem? Can you remember that?
I remember both. I've walked the gauntlet and I've been chopped up by it.
So you've been on both sides of that?
I've been on both sides many times, absolutely. And
is it true when you leap the net appears though?
Sometimes. And sometimes it takes a little longer to appear. But it does appear, yes.
Right.
So composure, a lot of times in my relationship at home, a lot of times with my wife, it's important because we both have a perspective and we both have our own perceptions and things when we come to discuss sensitive issues. Whether they're financial issues, whether they're relationship issues, whether they have to deal with our children or deal with big decisions that need to be made by the two of us, we both know that better decisions are made when two of us come in with a calm head and we're not either anxious to get our point across or to make a stand on something or to allow anything else than what we're doing right there take hold. So a lot of it is relationships, having that calmness because relationships, it's a fabric and to build those is important.
Come on, Carol. You're
okay,
on the spot.
So,
I know you've had poise. Lots of times I've watched it, but now you've got to recall it and tell us when you had it and when it worked for you. When did you... Oh, I remember one at the Quang Chu when you got up and just...
that's... I wouldn't call that. That's not notable.
Well, that was presence of mind.
I think presence of mind, what sticks in my mind the most is I'm not one to speak my mind or draw a line in the sand. I tend to acquiesce, whether it's in a conversation or something like that, or I can easily be perceived as bowled over by somebody else's opinion. But when I have spoken up, whether it's in defense of somebody else or to make my point without any kind of residue attached to it, I know it's the right thing because there's no sticking power afterwards. There's no, I shouldn't have said that, or that wasn't the right thing. I know that when I walk away, I've left everything on the table and it was the right thing.
What is the word you say? The words and the action?
The
thoughts and the action come together.
Yes, the thought and the action come together.
That's a nice
that for me is when
mean?
I know that I'm in that right state.
Yeah.
But I have to have presence of mind and a little bit of wherewithal in order to do it. No
nice.
Doubt about it.
Is that a crutch for your mindfulness practice?
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to happen when I'm anxious and trying to get rid of it, get it off the table right away. So, how about you? You got time to?
I guess the only
you're just always a cool, calm cat.
Well, I guess I'll use the example I told the class when they asked how my trip went on my retreat.
Yeah.
I said that I basically. I don't believe anymore that there's such a thing as physical pain, that the mental is involved with every aspect of physical pain. And the experience that I had was when I went out on retreat and had to do 90 minutes right off the bat, quiet meditation and stillness, and the pain was excruciating. For some reason, I had an awful lot of pain in my legs, and I know I'm used to doing an hour, and when it came to that turn of the hour, the pain started coming in. It's like, oh, here comes that freight train. And it was excruciating. And strength of will would not let me get up and walk out the door, even though it was okay to do it. I just wouldn't do it. And then I broke. The pain broke. I was able to actually look at my own pain as if it was, Carol, you that had broken your leg, and I'm looking at your pain. It was that distant from me. I still felt the pain, but I felt equanimous towards it. So it was at a meditation, and it was probably in the 70th minute when I broke, somewhere in that time frame. And it was very, very, actually it went from pain to equanimous to actually no pain, was the cycle of my experience. So that's why I say the physical pain doesn't exist independent of the mental. Anyways, folks, we gotta sign off. It's getting tight. We did cover a lot, though. We did stay to toes. Just a little turn around the barn, writing the obituaries.
Yes.
But that was cool.
Hey, it's
well, like, you know.
We'll have to listen to the tape and decide.
You run the show as long as you're okay with it.
Go, but I think you know that's kind of the shift in the conversation. I mean, you just don't know where it's going to go, and if you feel comfortable saying it, and that's how you feel.
I appreciate both of you tonight. I really do appreciate your honesty, and I hope the audience does as well.
Yeah.
Until next week, and we start the whole cycle over again next week with determination.
Yeah.
That's right.
Take care.
Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Have a good week.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals, yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.